Hello, everyone out there. This is Eugene B. Colson of Mind Controlled America. If you listen to the news, you go to church, guess what? You're under mind control, neurolinguistic mind control. The type of mind control this program is primarily about is CIA mind control, and its many fashions. In my case, it was MKUltra Operation Monarch. If you've seen the movie, Denzel Washington's movie, Manchurian Candidate, that's what they did to me. That's real. There's over 3 million people in the United States victims of this, and I brought on a special guest today. Victor, would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes. Well, good afternoon, and thank you for having me on the show, Eugene. It's a real pleasure. Yeah, basically, I myself is a former educator here in the city of Toronto. Spent 35 years both in administration and teaching here in one of the boards in the city of Toronto, Ontario, Canada, and principal for approximately 28 of those 35 years. And after that, I retired from the from that service and have been involved in the pursuit of the research and development of ideas surrounding the extraterrestrial presence. However, I've been involved in this type of research for probably, I would think, about 32 or 33 years, with my first kind of interest developing back in around 1975 and earlier than that. So I've been involved in this for a long, long time, and it's a many-faceted area, very interesting and very provocative, and I think it has some really interesting implications, both political, sociological, religiously, for the entire planet and every single person who kind of hangs out in this little ball of mud circling the sun. So it's a very important issue, and we work very, very hard to develop public education about the issue.
Now, being the show's on mind control, have you seen evidence of cover-up, mind control, disinformation on the UFO phenomenon?
Oh, for sure. I don't know how you actually characterize it in terms of mind control. There's that aspect to it. I've heard some rather unsavory stories about, and I emphasize the fact that they are stories. I have no way of actually proving this, but there is a lot of information that goes out that this, the HAARP experiments that are going on, plus certain types of individuals are able to do these kinds of things. However, my closest association with that kind of control would be through the pumping out of disinformation, and in the UFO research area that we try to develop an intellectual acuity around the amount of and the kind of information that comes out, both from the CIA, the FBI, government documents, and we are convinced that there's a dual-track set of information, and they become mixed up after a while in terms of it being difficult to tell the difference between real information and disinformation. And I have several CIA documents available to me through the Freedom of Information Access process that indicate the CIA has been involved in disseminating information about this issue since around 1951 or 52, and with deliberate attempts at controlling the media and individuals as to how they cover this information and what they, as an organization, the CIA that is, will do in order to confuse or obfuscate the matter of the UFO issue and all its related fields, because it's so interconnected. And they can pump out as many documents as they want, and we're in a position of having to kind of go through them and try to tell which ones are authentic, if so, and which ones are disinformation. So it's a sleight of hand game, Eugene, and it's a very difficult one. But we have to sort it out somehow. We have to begin somewhere, and we have to try to understand that the government is definitely... Now, when I say the government, I don't mean those poor souls who are sitting in Congress or up here in Canada that are members of Parliament, the elected members. They're not the ones that have really any kind of access to this information. I'm talking about deep, dark, black budget operations, the shadow government that's in existence that controls this issue and many, many other issues surrounding the UFO matter. So that kind of disinformation is, it's like a forest, really, and you're looking for certain kind of plants, and the kind of plants that you're looking for can disguise themselves in many different ways.
Well, Victor, I have found out that quite a few of the senators and congressmen here in the United States are, in fact, do have knowledge of this, know what's going on, And the song and dance that we see on television, for the most part, is just another distraction.
Mm-hmm.
They, for the most part, even the heads of most of the media know the real truth of what's going on.
Of course, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah. In fact, we had discussed, and what I stated previously, my experience at Area 51 in 03. And what I was remembering that was the most horrendous thing I've ever remembered. I've been part of Operation Phoenix in Vietnam. I've been part of a mind-controlled level massacring women and children in Central and South America and other parts of the world. But what goes on with the genetic experimentation on clone people? They call them clones. They consider them worthless clones. They're their property, just like they consider me at a mind-controlled level their property.
Yeah.
And right when I remembered that, oddly enough, it was during the height of the end of the campaign for the Democratic candidate for presidency, and one of the reporters on CNN says, Hillary Clinton, I mean Hillary Clone, Hillary Clinton said, and then went on. And that's how closely I'm monitored.
Mm-hmm.
Now, have you seen any evidence of the government entities or the black ops or whatever monitoring you and the people connected with you?
Evidence in terms of on a day-to-day basis, no. I don't feel that up here in Canada that it's that intense. Now, we have become a very, Exopolitics Toronto and the other associated organizations up here in Canada, we have become very political in our attempts to bring this forward to our political representatives, both elected and non-elected people in the Parliament of Canada. And as a result of that, it began, the process of that all began in 2005 when the Honorable Paul Hellyer, the former Minister of National Defense, spoke at a University Convocation Hall symposium up here in Toronto. University of Toronto is the largest university in Canada, and we had a symposium, our organization did, at the U of T Convocation Hall. And at that symposium, the Honorable Paul Hellyer, as I said, the former Minister of National Defense in the Pierre Trudeau government and the Lester B. Pearson government here up in Canada back in the mid-60s, he decided through some work that we had done with him to come forward after reading some very interesting material and as a consequence contacting a four-star general in the United States. And they spoke on the phone several times. I believe it was three times. And
what years are we talking about here, Victor?
When the conversations with the general?
Yes.
Yeah, it's 2005.
Be the current Joint Chiefs?
He was a four-star general in the Air Force. And Mr. Hellyer, at this point, is respecting this person's, wish to be anonymous. In any case, this all convinced Mr. Hellyer that there's something very serious going on with this whole UFO issue. And so he decided, with encouragement from us, and we gave him the opportunity to speak at our symposium. And my point is, Eugene, is that during the planning of that conference, my colleague, Michael Byrd, and I, in the early part of 2005, we had the symposium in May, but before that, we spent approximately 6 to 8 months planning this whole event, getting speakers and so on, and booking the venue. But during that time, we spent hours, literally hours, on the phone. And right towards the end, about 3.5 weeks before the event, Michael and I would spend time on the telephone, like, you know, you and I are talking right now, planning the event and just sort of going over, making sure all the T's were crossed and the I's are dotted. And I can tell you, Eugene, during that 3.5 weeks, just prior to the conference, we were cut off on my home telephone. And the telephone system up here in Canada is, you know, we never have those kinds of interruptions with our service. It's pretty, Bell has things pretty much under control, but we were cut off approximately 6 times during our conversations. Literally, our phones were just disconnected. We'd call again, sometimes 2 or 3 times during the same conversation, and at other times, just 1 or 2. But I sense, you asked whether there's evidence, I firmly believe that at that point in time, because Paul Hellyer was coming forward, somebody, somewhere, be they in the media leaking this information, or be it in the RCMP or CSIS, which is the equivalent of your CIA down there, the Canadian Intelligence and Security Agency is up here in Canada. I'm convinced that they were monitoring our conversations and making it difficult for us to achieve our goals. So when you say evidence, I won't say it's proof, but I think there is evidence there that we are in fact being monitored because we are becoming more and more intense about our political direction with this and communicating with the Prime Minister of Canada, the Governor General of Canada. We have correspondence from the Governor General of Canada asking about this information. And so we're getting to the core of the issue. So I guess in answer to your question, yes, we feel there is evidence that we are being monitored about our efforts within the UFO field.
Well, I'm monitored 24/7. In fact, Eugene B. Colson is my operational name. It's officially, I've never been in the military, but unofficially, Captain Eugene B. Colson, SEAL, and Delta Force General Brigadier Eugene B. Colson. And the White House gets a live feed of this, and so does NSA, CIA, and many other entities around the world. So if you want to say something to our fine president, who I wish he would repent, because I've been told by numerous people that know him that he is a devil worshiper. Him, the McCains, and the Clintons were involved at the gross mass ceremony, rape of my family as punishment for me when I was waking up. Anthony Hilder was there. I have memories of Anthony Hilder doing things to my ex-wife after a Valentine's Day party in 96. He's heavily involved in this. Anthony Hilder, if you're out there, you want to come on this show and claim that that's not true, we welcome that. And that goes the same for Alex Jones. In fact, I encourage every listener to this show, tell others about it. Go to David John Oates' ReverseSpeech.com and learn what that is. And when we speak forward, we also give subconscious messages backward when you play the tape backwards. Most of it's from your subconscious mind.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why did you get involved in this? Why are you on this path?
That's an excellent question, Eugene. Well, I guess initially, as a youngster, when I was a child, I always had a kind of an interest in, becoming, involved in the aspect of flying. You know, I wanted to be in the Air Force up here in Canada. It was always taken with, with flight and things to do with the sky. It just fascinated me. Now, as to why those kinds of interests developed in me, I'm not quite sure. Perhaps it was a combination of the friends that I had at the time, or whatever. In any case, I've always had an interest in the universe and the sheer size of it and our ability to move within the universe, being as limited as it is. I always thought in my mind, even as a child, that there had to be a way to navigate this huge universe of ours. We as human beings were not meant to just sit and stay on this planet. And I felt this very, very strongly from my very early days. And like I said, I don't know why I felt that way, but I think it's just sort of intuitive feeling that this is a big, huge universe, and at some point in our development, in our evolution, we are going to be able to move within time and space. Don't quote me on that as to when, but in any case, I developed that passion, and it moved with me through high school and into my early days of teaching.
Now, let's stop right there for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Now, many people believe that there is a strong devil-worshipping and occult connection with this UFO phenomenon. Was there any occult activity around you when you were a child or teenager?
I wouldn't say that I'd characterize it at the time or knowing what it was. Looking back at it now, someone, who listened to the conversation might be able to characterize it as, that type of experience, occult, or whatever you want to call it.
Well, let me ask this question, and
okay.
You can continue on that vein in this as well. Were people around you that were close to you, were any of them victims of mind control?
Okay.
You don't have to say who they are or what they are.
Well, subsequently, I think people that I've gotten to know that were in my childhood, I would say that there's something going on with the way they have been treated.
Like they had missing time?
I had individuals. I have members of my family who have been involved in that kind of situation. I have had dealings with the so-called abductee phenomenon. That's, I'm sure many of your listeners have heard of that. I, at one point in time, I would say within the past, it's been about 4 years now since I've been involved in it, but I spent about a 12-year period following the abduction phenomenon very, very closely. And as a result of that, contacting people and in issues and having going to seminars and so on, people were drawn towards me to share their stories with me. And I, to be really honest with you, I didn't know what to do about it. So I did as much reading as I possibly could and tried to figure out what was going on and realized that the abduction phenomenon was a real phenomenon. Exactly what it was, I didn't know, but it was a phenomenon. And these people were going through something very, very real. And their stories, I might add, too, they do not want them made public. They don't want to have any kind of notoriety surrounding them just because they may have had some sort of experience with extraterrestrials or whatever it might be. They want to talk to someone about it and try to sort out their life and make it stop. So as a result of talking to these individuals... and even
so all these people always... you got the same angle that whatever's doing this to them is an evil vent.
I would say 80% of them perceived it as evil, as something that it was intrusive, something that they did not give their permission for. They felt that they were being taken and things being done to them that they did not want to have done. And the other 15 or 20% somehow got over it and realized that somehow they were drawing a positive spin from it. And after they become desensitized to it, they've stopped becoming victims and get through the fear, they begin to see it more clearly.
Well, you brought up my next point, because to those, the 80% who are fearful, number one, when they took my family away from me, when I realized they were all mind-controlled sex slaves and used for other purposes, I was terrified for a year. Then I lost my fear, and I'm on the attack. And to anyone listening, or anyone who knows anyone's involved with this, if they're fearful, they need to sit down and lose their fear and just tell themselves that there's nothing that they haven't done to me that they might do again. I can't stop it, but I'm not going to be afraid of it. And I'm going to rely on God to deal with these evil, satanic men that are pushing this. Now, how many of these people had reoccurring dreams?
The people that I dealt with, I would say the total number of individuals that I had experiences with in terms of either helping them, because I have a counseling background as an educator, and I guess perhaps my capacity to listen and understand or try to relate to their experiences was one that they had an affinity for. So they share with me a lot of information. And the kinds of things, these recurring dreams, I would say that... The number of individuals that I dealt with, and I'm guessing at the number right now, if I look, I could go back to my book and get the exact number. I would say there's about 15 to a dozen and a half individuals that I've spoken with on a continuous basis, some more than others. And the recurrence of these experiences, or these so-called dreams, was absolutely, it was almost so repetitive that people could go to bed at night and know that they were going to be hit that day, or just feel that they were going to be hit that day. And then they would do one of two things. They would go through the experience and say, Victor, they would call me, Victor, I had this experience last night. Or they'd call me before and say, I think something's going to happen tonight. And then either that next night or the day after, they'd call me and say, yes, X, Y, and Z happened. And then they'd relate the situation, and we would talk about it. And as you say, the ones that really dealt with it the best, and what I tried to do, and it's really ironic, Eugene, that you mentioned this, What I learned from all of this is that these individuals have to stop perceiving themselves rather as being victims and get through the fear and put the fear aside and be so dominant and challenging to these creatures or whoever's doing this that these beings or whoever they are doing this do not respond well to that kind of challenge. And
I'm glad you said that, because in the last number of years when they would use me at a mind control level, and they can still get inside my head, but I know who I am, and they can no longer get me to do things that they used to be able to. Mm-hmm. After 94, they lost the ability to have me kill women and children. I was the main shooter at Waco in the underground tunnels from that APC out front. And after 94, they could no longer get me to do that. Now they can't get me to do anything I would not do.
Mm-hmm.
I have no problem taking out evil people, none whatsoever. And the last mission I was on was a SEAL mission in Nicaragua, first Wednesday wee hours of the morning on the cocaine corridor, where we seized 40 metric tons of cocaine. I woke up on the C-130, and I was myself, and I did the whole mission as myself, and they were terrified. halfway through when they found out they weren't dealing with Captain Eugene B. Coulson, but they were dealing with the real me.
Uh-huh.
Now, the reason they go after people is anybody who's got a spiritual gift, God's miraculously saved them, he answers their prayers. Satan and his bunch know who they are, and they relate that to their high priests and priestesses. And quite often, they try to mind control people of this vent. If they cannot do that to you, they put you on a watch list for the rest of your life, and you're monitored.
Mm-hmm.
Has any of the other people said anything like this to you?
What comes to mind right now are two specific individuals, one man and one woman. Actually, two men and one woman. One of the men who has since, very, very unfortunate, because of the intensity of his experiences, he actually committed suicide, Eugene.
Let's put a warning out there to anybody who is a mind control victim. Once you realize you're a mind control victim or satanically ritually abused, there is a suicide program. And in my case, it lasted for 4 days. I could constant, nonstop thoughts of how to kill yourself.
Yeah.
And at the end of the fourth day, Sue Ford had a woman call me and warn me the suicide program was going to kick in. I said, well, gee, I guess that's what I've been dealing with, and I'm sure that's what happened with this gentleman.
Well, this gentleman was a trained psychologist, okay? You have to know this individual to understand that the depth that he went to while dealing with this really, really gut-wrenching series of experiences. He shared with me experiences where he was in his bed and was literally energized with electricity to the point where he levitated over his bed, and there was an aura around him where he was charged with electricity or some sort of intense energy, and he can remember floating above his bed and this electrical energy just pulsing through him and doing just bizarre things to his physical body and to his mind. And he went through this several times, and he did not know how to deal with it. And then he also spoke to me about these walk-ins in his dreams, these dreams he would be having where these different individuals on a recurring basis would walk in and out. He called them walk-ins, walk in and out of his dreams and be people that are recurring in his dreams on a constant basis. And you know, many people thought of this individual as mentally unstable, whereby this man was probably one of the most intelligent individuals that I've ever met in my life.
Oh, yeah. Every time somebody comes forward with anything that's from the black ops government, you're paranoid, schizophrenic, and delusional. And they put that label on you.
That's right.
And in my case, I filed for disability and told the truth, and I'm sure that's the label they put on me because they wouldn't let me read it.
Of course,
but I have yet to meet the U.S. Navy SEAL who has not heard of Captain Eugene B. Coulson. Now, did he have any of the ETs or aliens, extraterrestrials, come in when
they
were doing?
They were a discreet group of entities that he had very frequent contact with, and eventually, and the really interesting part about this is we talked about the aspect of fear. At one point, we thought that this fellow had overcome the fear because he began to have experiences with the extraterrestrial component that were, I'm not going to say that they were positive, but they were less intimidating. They were more of a cooperative adventure.
Were they the traditional Greys or a different?
Yes, yes. It was the traditional Greys. But yet,
well, let me interject here before, and then I'll let you continue.
Yeah, sure. Yep.
In 03, when they send me down to Area 51, sublevels 1.1 to 21.1, that was a Gray production facility.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me, this is what the scientists told me, I said, where did they come from? They said they were designed by pre-flood man. We can make the Grays better, but we cannot duplicate the anti-gravity devices. And there is a very satanic bent to that. And I don't know if all these other ones, if some were made out in outer space.
Of course,
but
yeah.
My beliefs are that it's all connected with the satanic side. Now, go ahead and tell me more about this gentleman.
Yeah, the idea is that he didn't have, at the time now, he didn't have any information about where these individuals came from. But he found himself in situations where these so-called extraterrestrials or these Grays were sort of commandeering him from wherever he was at a particular time, either his bed or his living room or whatever. But he also felt very strongly that there were other presences around him that were non-gray, they were non-extraterrestrial. He felt that they were something very, very human. And that always confused me. And I'm talking now, oh gosh.
Well, to make a gray, currently, I don't know what it took in the 50s when they started reverse engineering,
right,
the ones
yeah.
that crashed at Roswell. It takes three clone fetuses and one clone 15-year-old girl, and they all must die to create one of these things. These things are part man. They're biologic computers, at least the ones that I saw.
Yeah. Well, the number of stories, especially that I heard from females, which takes me to the next level, where...
Well, most women remember this more than men. Very few men come out of this. I'm one of very, very few.
Yeah, you're right. You're exactly right, Eugene. Men are, I would say, they're in the minority by a long shot in this whole thing. However, the women that that I've been in contact with who've had this, their stories, and these people are from literally all over the planet. You know, here in the city of Toronto, Vancouver...
Didn't in the Toronto in 1990 a whole group pull themselves free from the Monarch program and sued the Canadian government, the CIA, the United States government?
Apparently, yes. In pulling away from the monarchy and all of that, they declared themselves as free people. It was rather an interesting process. Yeah.
That's what happened with David Koresh at Waco. He was breaking them free. He was going to file suit in federal court. And they would not be able to stop the lawsuit. That's why they were murdered. And I was at Waco. I was the main shooter in the tunnel at the mind control level. The guy behind me with a flamethrower started the backdraft. When they debriefed me at the command trailer a mile away, who was standing outside by a government Buick when I walked out? Timothy McVeigh. That was part of his programming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well.
Now, go ahead. Continue.
Well, no, I just in reference to the young ladies that I've spoken to. They because they're so disparate in terms of not knowing each other, but yet they have the common story, and then on top of all of that, not wanting any kind of notoriety and having done no reading on it before. These were all raw experiences, and they're telling Eugene virtually the same story. And you could just change the dates and the places, and you've got yourself virtually replicated circumstances about A, how they were taken, when they were taken as children, their parents who may have been taken. I had one individual tell me that she was in her living room, and she had a direct experience where the Greys, the small Greys, came in. Her mother and her father were on the couch watching television, and this young lady was about 12 years old at the time. The Greys came into the room. The television that they were watching went all fuzzy and snowy. Their parents were shut off. She saw her parents shut off. And then these Greys began to interact with her right in the room telepathically. And then this experience lasted about 8 to 10 minutes, and then they left. And the parents back online again, and then life continued. And she just thought it was a bad dream.
Well,
she was conscious all the time.
When I was in Area 51, I don't, you know, at this point in time, I don't remember everything, but I don't know, remember any of the telepathic stuff. But when these things would want to communicate with each other and download information, they would just touch foreheads like ants.
Yeah.
And now, did these Greys she was describing, did they have any elaborate respirator or gloves on when they came in?
I did not get that information from her. The only information that I got was the description of them being very specific, because they stood at the end of the couch. They had long arms. Very long.
Were these the tall Greys or the short Greys?
No, these were the short ones. The two
okay.
that were there were short ones. Now, as afterwards, in her later on in her life, when she was actually taken from her actual bedroom, she began to have experiences where the same female taller Grey and these so-called taller doctors, the, you know, quote unquote doctors, who were venturing into her reproductive organs and developing, she eventually gave birth to a fetus, and she was brought back and forth several times to hold this fetus, and the nurse, the so-called female Grey, the taller Grey, would stand behind her and watch her as she would hold this fetus, and she held it several times, and it looked very human, but it had the larger eyes, and they watched her very closely as she would hold this fetus to kind of develop a relationship with it. So those types of things, the individual grays that she saw were the shorter ones. Then when she was brought back onto the craft, she was exposed to these holding experiences where she would have to gaze into the eyes of this little baby, so-called fetus, or no, it wasn't a fetus, but this born baby, and communicate with it. And she went through these things several times.
In a sense, you're bringing out what I already know, is that even the grays and the other ones, they start out as human, but now they're victims.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, that's a very good assessment of the situation, yeah.
So it's not their fault that these evil men did this to them. Now, did she claim that she was ritually or sexually abused in any ways that she knew of?
In her life as a human or with other humans, or
maybe reoccurring dreams of sex parties and orgies and stuff like that?
Now I'm trying to think back.
Are you still in contact with this woman?
No, I'm not. This woman has decided to just stop. This stopped probably, any communication that I had with this individual stopped in 2003.
So she got fearful and cut off contact.
And just stopped, yeah. She just went on with her life, and this is very typical, because this has happened with many of the individuals who have, I still maintain some contact with some of the other people. But this particular young lady, I don't hear from her anymore. There was one young lady here in the city of Toronto whose mother called me because she heard me on our radio program. And she asked me, this was about, I'd say about 4.5 years ago, where this young lady was just absolutely right at the edge of her own humanity. And she was ready to fall off the table and just commit suicide and kill herself. And so her mother, you know, called me after a radio program, and this young lady left home, and she went up to the Yukon here in Canada, and hid out in the Yukon. And she hid out in the home of, I guess, the Inuit people up there, and that's where she stayed for about 2.5 years. And on occasions, would call me from the local hotel, and ask me certain questions about why she was being bothered in this way. And these were stories, Eugene, that were very, very untypical of the sort of stereotypical abductee stories. These were stories of very satanic or very bizarre interactions with her, both sexually and in a mind control way. And
when I was 9 years old, I didn't believe in this alien UFO stuff. I thought it was CIA's disinformation. But when I got the flashback of the ritual abuse alien scenario, where the women were wearing full-body leotards with glow-in-the-dark grays on the front, and the men wore their satanic habits with a glow-in-the-dark alien mask, and they had me strapped to a board inverted 45-degree down angle between putting dental tools up my nostrils and sanding it raw and shocking my brain from inside the nasal cavities, they were saying things like, you're on the mothership, and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And I didn't believe it until I met Lieutenant Colonel S.C., who was on the Daniel Ott show.
Mm-hmm.
And are you still in contact with this woman?
No. I tried, and she has, I don't know where she is right now. I'm talking now 5 years ago, well over 5 years ago.
Any of the current victims of this, you know, you have my permission to give them my personal phone number, because they're all victims of the same thing, the mind control. And I can get them faster, farther than a psychiatrist and a psychologist in most cases.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I remember one specific instance when I was 10 where the gray, I mean, you saw pictures of the gray that was at Roswell?
Yep. Yeah.
That type of one was in my parents' bedroom, and I was raised in a satanic coven. I believe my great uncle's first name was Merlin. My father's middle name is Merlin. Who names your kid after a wizard and a sorcerer? Unless you're a wizard or a sorcerer
yourself. Yes.
I remember having a conversation, or it came up there, and it was talking, and I was scared to death. And it was like people that don't have a larynx anymore, and they use one of those vibration devices to talk.
Right.
This was like 10 of them in a row, and it had a real crackly deep, evil voice. Has anyone ever described anything like that to you?
Actually, a very close family member of mine has reported hearing those kinds of sounds. I guess I'll try to describe it to you. It's like he described it as a radio station where there's a voice on the radio station, but someone has their hand on the dial, and the voice is saying something, but the person with their hand on the dial is moving the dial back and forth. So you're hearing static, you're hearing conversation or words, and then you're hearing more static. So it's like it's back and forth, like someone's searching to fine-tune where a radio station would be. So you'd hear static and, you know, radio kind of interference. Then you'd hear the voice and very crackly, and then you'd hear more and more static and so on. So this would go back and forth, and your ear would try to pick up the sound, but because of the static or the crackling noises, you really couldn't.
Yeah, well, the crackling is exactly how I would describe it.
Yeah, and this was a very common experience, and this individual would hear it, and it would be not necessarily during any of these experiences with you know, so-called extraterrestrials or whatever, but they would he would report this as part of like a dream scenario that he heard these voices while the static was going on, and he felt like he was sort of an observer in a room, and someone was turning the dial so that they could hear the static and the voice at the same time and on an intermittent basis. So
now, how many of these people claim to be electrically shocked and tortured while this is going on?
Oh, goodness. Well, the first individual that I mentioned to you, the fellow who has since committed suicide, is one for sure. The other male that I described to you does that, has reported that. But this one individual has reported these experiences, not necessarily for his full body, but he experienced this with his genitals. And his genitals were shocked to the point where he had severe problems with his genitalia, both his penis and his testicles. And he recalls this very, very frequently happening to him. Virtually every time he was taken, over a period of time, it would happen. Oddly enough, I'm trying to think now, to be really honest with you, I don't recall many women reporting that to me. They reported more of just the typical abduction scenario. The electrification thing didn't seem to happen with these women that I've had any kind of contact with. But
I have talked to women who have said they've used a lot of electrical shock and torture with their genitalia as well.
Really, yeah, you know, I guess these two gentlemen did, and I've yet to talk to a woman who's reported. Most of it is more of the probing of the genitalia and, you know, having things inserted and things taken out, and these other sort of viewing fetuses, viewing babies, having to hold them. This kind of thing is very common with the women, but I've yet to hear that, but the electrical part with the female people that I've dealt with.
Now, you yourself have seen some of these UFOs in person. Why don't you tell us about that?
Well, yeah, it's an interesting kind of thing. My wife and I, in 1996, I went on a tour of Arizona, New Mexico, and Nevada, and we did it. It's sort of a vacation, but my agenda was I wanted to get to some of the major sites that I'd read about in my research. And we visited such places as Corona, New Mexico, Roswell. I went to Roswell, Los Alamos, Alamogordo, Kirkland Air Force Base. So we toured every major facility that we could get to. And I can tell you that on our way there and our way back, we spent, to begin with, 3 days. The first night we were in Nevada, 3 days in the desert just outside of Area 51. And then that's when we began our tour. Nothing happened the first 3 days that we were there. We camped out in the desert and nothing happened. We saw planes flying by, regular, I guess, jets and so on, with the regular red and white and green flashing lights. Very slow moving, nothing out of the ordinary. We did our tour and then came back. And as we came back, we spent another 3 nights in the desert. And on the middle night, the Wednesday night, my wife and I were driving along Highway 375, the so-called alien highway, just outside of Rachel. We're moving between Rachel and Tonopah, which I don't know if you're familiar with the Tonopah testing grounds just outside of Area 51. In any case, We're driving along, I guess we're going in a northwest direction, and my wife said, stop the car. And so I did. I pulled over, and she said, I see something above the mountains. So we got out of the car, and we pulled over to the side, got out of the car, and we stood with our faces facing north and looking over the roof of the car. And about 5 to 8 miles to the northwest of where we were is a huge mountain range. This was like at dusk, okay, for maybe 8:30, 9 o'clock. It was just beginning to get dark. And she pointed to a light up in the sky. And to begin with, it looked like just a pinpoint of light, like maybe the size of a small dime if you held it out at arm's length. And then this craft, or this light, began to change. It was intense white to begin with. And then, Eugene, it became for lack of a better word, diaphanous, or like a snowflake. With, you know, if you have a light that becomes diffused, and then when it was gone from this intense white light to this diffused snowflake configuration, it did that for about 5 to 8 seconds, and then after it became this diaphanous color, it began to spin very, very quickly. And this is just happening. Right, the whole thing lasted probably 2 or 3 minutes, and then it became three, as it began to spin, 3 points of very smaller orange lights in a triangular shape. So a triangle at the top with an orange light, and then a small orange light to the left, and a small orange, and that began to rotate again very, very quickly. And I could not believe what I was seeing. And after spending time in the desert, you see airplanes flying along, these jets flying along with just a singular movement, you know, straight line, linear movement, and you see this thing hovering, doing this, and I've got this on audio tape, by the way, and this thing begins to spin, and as these orange lights spin, they get larger and larger and larger, turn back into the white light again. They coalesce, turn back into the white light again, and very intense, and this thing literally flicked out of sight, like just in a snap of a finger. It just went, I couldn't
away
even see
from
how
you,
fast
towards
it
you?
Was
it away from you?
Us, away from us over the mountains.
Okay, so very high rate of speed.
Oh, Eugene, it was just like, you know, you could. It left no trail. It just, I would say that it winked out, but it didn't wink out. It didn't just disappear. It literally vectored away from where it was hovering, and it was in the same position all the time.
So both you and your wife are both victims of mass hysteria, and you were both paranoid, schizophrenic, and delusional at the same time.
Of course, yes. We're all very sick people.
Yes. Now, you were in Australia as well, weren't you?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Tell us what you saw.
Yeah, we spent a full year in Australia. My wife currently she's a principal of a school, but she's at the time she was teaching, and this was in 2003, and we went down there, exchanged homes, and she taught, and during the day I did research. I connected with several individual groups in Brisbane, Australia, in the northern part of the country, and in Sydney, and in Melbourne, and got very close to the leading researchers down there, and spoke at two conferences while I was down there, and I attempted to, but could not, and this is unfortunate, get even close to Pine Gap, which is in the central part of Australia, which is the equivalent of the Area 51, from what I understand. Okay, it's a monitoring.
I have been told that it is, yes, there's one over in Europe and Russia as well.
Right. Yeah.
And in all these facilities, this is where they do the vast majority of
That's
their
right. It's pegged as an observation.
Engineering.
Yeah, it's pegged as an observation location, but all of the UFO researchers there are very convinced that there's much more going on there. Now, the reason that I did not go there was because you have to understand, the Australian outback is a very, very dangerous place, very dangerous. While we were there, we heard multiple stories of individuals who decided to try to cross the terrain in SUVs or different kinds of vehicles, and we got halfway through, and they'd run out of gas, even though they had, gas tanks in reserve. They would just get lost, and they have to send out helicopters or whatever to get them. So I would not be able to even consider venturing out into the middle of the Australian outback, because it's one thing to go into the Nevada desert where the highway infrastructure is very easy to move around. Your mobility is very good. But in Australia, there is no major infrastructure that allows you to get to those locations in the way that might be a little bit more accessible here in North America. So I chose not to risk my life to get out there. But so now,
did the Australians you were working with, did they claim to cite similar sightings?
Oh, of course, yes. Actually, it was really interesting. The conference.
So they're all paranoid, schizophrenic, and delusional too.
Of course, yeah. And another part of the planet, yes, they're all very sick and very unfortunate people, just like we are here. You know, you're right. You know, it's that the things that I heard in Australia, and I think you should, if the name Peter Corey has any meaning to you, he was an abductee that we met with down there, and he's part of the UFO organization in Brisbane with Diane Harris. And this man, he had a story to tell that would just literally curl your hair. And his story is that if you're sitting down, and if your listeners are, it's been investigated by Bill Chalker, C-H-A-L-K-E-R, okay, Bill Chalker. And this story has been investigated by Bill. It involved an abduction situation where Peter was in his bedroom, and these two absolutely beautiful and just ultra gorgeous female entities came into his room, sat at the end of his bed, had sex with this man repeatedly, and as a result of that, the next morning, this man woke up with hair, not of his own, wrapped around his penis. And they had the hair analyzed. And this hair was shown to be of a type of hair, the DNA structure, that was similar to women of Manchurian genetic material. And Bill Chalker, if you want to investigate this further on the Internet, has investigated this along with several other individuals. And this abduction story is probably one of the most unique in abduction history. And when I spoke with Peter, and Peter was an individual, very sharp, very literate, articulate, part
now,
of the UFO team down.
Did it have any other genetic material in it other than human?
Yes. Oh, the DNA, the stuff that was in it, Eugene, was just completely confused the analysts. They said, this should not be here. There was human DNA in there. There was DNA they did not recognize. Different kinds of configurations of it. I'm not a genetics expert, but this stuff was analyzed, and it was proven that this stuff was not all human. There were other types of DNA material within the strands of this hair, and apparently the samples that Peter was able to give Mr. Chalker were very, very substantial. Like, it wasn't just one little small piece.
Well, I used to know a doctor of biology, and he said that they found what they thought was a pre-flood man, and it was genetically mostly human, but different than us.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the Bible says that they were that Noah was pure in all of his generations because him and his family are the only ones that weren't genetically altered, possibly.
It's very it's a very very, you know what it is, it's very confusing. That's what I think is the scenario, is the theme of all of this. It's very, very confusing information, and it's sent to test our intellectual acuity, and I think that's one of the reasons why it's coming out the way it is. And one of the reasons why I blame the media for not dealing with this in a more coherent way, so that they can get some really good scientific analysis of this, is far beyond the realm of possibility, because the level of ridicule and the psychosis that's been associated with anyone who's had any kind of experiences denies us access to good scientific information that may clear this issue up a little bit more and at least point to the truth of what's really happening. Because it's like a jigsaw puzzle, and we're being forced to put this jigsaw puzzle together with all of the pieces facing down, you know?
Well, the people in Australia, were many of them convinced that there was an evil side to this as well?
Some believe that. There was a contingency among them that felt that there was this whole satanic element to it. But I must say that for the most part, no. I know Peter Curry, when he felt this, he thought initially that it could have been something satanic. But I think what really proved it to him is that these women did not appear to be in any way malevolent. So then I guess that was his belief, that it was sort of visitation. But it was nothing to do with any type of quote-unquote alien-looking. They were very different-looking, but they were not necessarily alien in composition.
Now, a lot of people believe that the New World Order, which this country is primarily run by, is going to create a false end-time scenario of an alien invasion. That's why we need to get together. Have you heard anything similar to that?
Yes. We have two excellent researchers, Alfred Lambremont Weber, who is a Canadian of American origin. He's living now in Vancouver, in British Columbia, Canada, and he is convinced that the false flag operation that's being planned at some point will eventually transpire, and how it's going to eventuate will be proof enough to the general public and to the media. And this will be the scenario. The scenario will be that its mission will be to convince the media and the public in general that the alien or whatever this is definitely a malevolent force and that it's not to be trusted. And when this false flag operation does happen, that the media will convince everyone, and we will be the losers in this, that the alien force that's out there, be they benevolent or not, is unassuredly evil. So, I mean, that's part of the scenario, and there's a lot of forces out there in play that are attempting to convince us that they are, in fact, evil or part of some sort of satanic. But one of the things that we believe is if there's evil, there's also good. So there should be counterparts to that evil someplace, and we need to listen to what these entities are saying to us, because there is a message from them, too, Eugene. The message from them, too, is that they have the possibility of turning this whole thing around. And the intense rivalry among these groups within the extraterrestrials themselves and these evil entities to gain dominance, I think it's a battle that's being waged above our heads. And
many people believe we're a couple years into the seven-year tribulation cycle. Mm-hmm. Now, have you heard much of, like, we're hearing a lot of rumors down here, and I've heard from other sources that are not rumors that President Bush is trying to put this country under martial law. Have you heard much about that?
The answer to that question is a definite yes. The kinds of things that we're hearing up here, and I should say this too, that we spoke. I spoke at a conference in Washington, D.C. Back in April, the X conference run by Stephen Bassett. And during the conference, it's a four-day conference. During that, many of the speakers get together informally, both before the lectures and after the lectures, during dinner, and you talk. And one of the major issues down there at that time was that the Bush administration was somehow planning some sort of operation in Iran, and you can read in the paper today where Iran sent several missiles into the air to as a test flight for their missiles to prove that they can in fact hit Israel. So it's heating up. Stage one has begun, I think. But the fact of the matter is that the United States government may be involved in planning some sort of intervention in Iran. And
they already have it. They yanked me February 2 years ago, and
exactly.
I planned it.
Yeah. But again,
the plan's already there. It's been there for several years. In fact, on Fox 2 years ago, Fox News, they were saying there was a plan circulating the Senate to hit Iran with nuclear bunker busters.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about here.
Yeah, in answer to your question, once this does transpire, what will happen, and this is what the talk was in Washington back in April, was that eventually what's going to happen is this war or whatever, this conflict will transpire, and the Bush government will declare some sort of suspension to the actual election process, that there will be no elections in November, and that martial law will be declared. And
this is probably true in Canada as well as the United States. Now, I've found out several months ago that the FBI has come around to every police station and sheriff's department, and they explain briefly what CIA mind control victim monarchs are, that if martial law is declared, they either round us up and put us in prison for the rest of our life, and I've heard from others, if they just kill us. So they do it to us, and they victimize us.
Yeah.
And I'm sure
yeah.
that's the same scenario in Canada.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. The you know what? It's something very, it's very insidious, Eugene. We're, as I said, the metaphor that I'm, that I rely on a lot is like the jigsaw puzzle. There's the fine jigsaw puzzle that you have out on the dining room table up at the cottage, you know, and you, but all the pieces are facing down, and you don't. First of all, you don't know what the picture is, and you've got all these pieces in front of you, and what's even worse, some of the pieces are missing, but you're expected to put all this thing together and try to make sense of it, as any thinking human, rational human being would want to do. And this is really kind of something that really irritates me to no end, is that the people in the media who have access to this information, because we're providing it with them to them on a constant basis. We're giving them documents until they're...
It's like I told you, Victor. The media is part of the problem. All the big guys on television are either Illuminati, Jesuit, or, you know, CIA, or the Canadian equivalent, Mafia,
yeah. well,
or whatever.
Yeah, in a sense, I agree with you. But in another sense, I must say to your listeners that, especially up here in Canada, there is a contingent of media here, Eugene, that, and I really believe this, who really want to get to the bottom of it. Now, I'm not saying that these people are in executive positions. These are journalists who want to write stories about it. And that's what I presented back in April in Washington. I think the Canadian media is a little bit more amorphous, or a little bit more less controlled than some of the huge operations. I mean, you go back and you try to find out who owns ABC, and who owns, you know, Disney, and who owns NBC and CBS, and who, where the control is there. That's different than CBC up here in Toronto.
Now that you mentioned Disney, now did any of these abductees claim to be seeing clowns that would turn into aliens or maybe Disney characters?
The theme, going back to that again, the theme of clowns, Eugene, is one of the dominant themes in the abduction experience. Many of the people are very vivid in their recollection of seeing these almost comedic-looking clown figures with the large eyes and the big, you know, the white face and the large red lips, and the clown metaphor, or the icon of the clown, is a very strong component in many abduction experiences. And where that comes from, and for some reason, in some of my research, the Disney name comes up consistently.
Why don't we give your contact information? Contact me. It's Eugene B. Colson at yahoo.com. Mm-hmm. Eugene B. Colson, Culson at yahoo.com. What's your contact information, Victor?
My email address is Zland, Z, as we say up here in Canada, Zland, at simpatico.ca. Simpatico is simpatico.ca. So Zland at simpatico.ca.
Now, are you still in contact with some of these abductees?
Eugene, unfortunately, I have chosen, and for what reason I don't know, I have chosen to, because of, I just can't do everything all at once. It's very difficult for us and our organization to deal with multiple issues. I have chosen to remain relatively aloof from doing any more contact or counseling with this. Now, that does not mean that individuals...
What about others in your organization?
I would say that there are people who are still open to that, that may be able to work at that. But it's such a stressful, and I really do have to say that it's a very stressful type of activity, dealing with people, and they come from different places in terms of their own intellectual understanding of what's going on. Some of these people are very straightforward, very easy to talk to, easy to contact. They tell stories in a very coherent way, and I don't mind dealing with that. But some of them, Eugene, I'm not saying this in any kind of denigrating way at all, are very, very difficult individuals. They'll call in the middle of the night and tell stories and want me to do this and want me to do that. I just find it extremely stressful on me.
Well,
and my
we're at the end of our program here,
yep.
And I want to thank you, Victor, for coming on.
Oh, you're most welcome.
Maybe we can continue this next week, or maybe you could get with some of your people and, you know, bring one or two more of them online with us as well.
Well, that's always a possibility of people who wish to begin telling their stories. It's a story that has to be told, and I will take every and any opportunity to tell the story. And just one
okay,
thing,
well,
I'm
going to have to sign off now.
Okay.
So, Anthony Hilder, if you claim you're not part of this operation and everything I remember and everything everyone told me, wants to come on this show, and we'll have our little talk. We will do a reverse speech thing afterwards, because that's how I found Anthony Hilder.
Yeah.
And we'll see who's telling what. So I thank you very much, Victor. And this is Eugene B. Colson at Mind Control America, signing off.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.